Welcome to the Internet Report. My name is Angelique Medina, and I'm joined by my co-host, Archana Kesavan.
Hey, guys.
And what we're going to cover is all of the events that are worth noting that happened on the internet last week. And last week was actually a very busy week for us because we saw a service outage at YouTube. There was an issue with Slack on Tuesday of last week. We also saw a pretty big Google network outage. And what else? There was also some regional sites that had some issues. So we're going to cover all of that on the show today. So lots to unpack, a lot of application-related stuff, a little bit of network stuff, and we'll do some stats. So with that, we'll go ahead and get started. And as I mentioned last week, and I'll go ahead and mention that again here, for those of you who do not subscribe yet to the Internet Report, we cover a lot of really interesting stuff, a lot of it network related or internet related, but a lot of it also related to the availability and performance of applications and services like we're going to spend a lot of time with today. So go ahead and check us out. You can subscribe to us on YouTube and anywhere that you get your podcasts. So with that, we're going to start with the YouTube service outage, because that is the outage that really got the most attention for users, because it was also a global issue. Mm-hmm. So the way that it unfolded was, you know, we see here this happened on May 14th, which is last Thursday. And it happened around 4-ish or so.
4:30, 4:45 PST.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, it basically was a situation in which users all over the globe, so not just in the U.S. or on the West Coast, were just simply not able to load content on the YouTube site. And YouTube themselves later issued a statement basically saying, you know, so this came from YouTube. They put a tweet out saying that if you're experiencing error messages, that they had fixed the issues, and they had said that it really only lasted about 20 minutes. So what we saw during the outage is pretty interesting. It really does corroborate what YouTube was saying in terms of the duration of the outage. So what we can say kind of right up front is that it wasn't a network issue. So we were seeing that for all of the paths from users to Google's front door, their edge servers, everything looked pretty clean. And we keep mentioning Google here because, of course, Google is the owner for YouTube, right? So YouTube is one of Google services. So we could see, you know, for a variety of locations around the globe, and I'm just going to go to this map here so you can kind of see what we're looking at from a coverage standpoint. So in this particular instance, we're testing to YouTube.com, and this represents a pretty nice distribution of users around the globe. We've got US, Europe, Australia, Asia, and, you know, just at a first glance, everything looks green here, and we can even see that, you know, during the time of the incident, so again, it's around 4:20 p.m. on the 14th, the HTTP GET, you know, all of that looks good. So basically, Google's front door is reachable.
So this was interesting, right? Because people are not complaining that they couldn't load or get to YouTube. Yep. They couldn't load kind of the videos in YouTube. So reaching the front door was not the problem. Just the availability of the server, as you're seeing here, was not necessarily the problem. I think the detail lies in terms of when the page's actually loading, what's happening.
So what's interesting here is that, you know, we can see in this particular kind of time series data up here is basically tracking how long it takes on average to load YouTube.com. And during the period of time when people are complaining, the page load time actually went down. And at first glance, you might think, oh, that's actually a good thing, right? You should be able to load the page faster. But in fact, what this is, indicative of is that there are certain components that are really critical to the service that are just not able to load. And that's why there's the overall time to load the page is reduced. So if we just look at an example here, so let's just click on Ashburn. So again, we see, they're experiencing the same thing. There's all kinds of stuff going on here. What's pretty notable is that during the course of the outage, we are seeing that there are basically like 500 errors. So
from one particular component, like the AJAX file, right there.
Right. Yeah. So there's browse underscore AJAX object is throwing up a 500 error. What's interesting about this is that if you go back in time to when the service was available, we don't see this error anymore. And the same thing, afterwards as well. It goes away. But during the outage, it's there. The other thing that's kind of interesting, because AJAX basically, it's sort of a mechanism that's kind of keeping a request flow in place as you're interacting with the web page. And so in looking at what the page overall looks like before, during, and after, we can see, for example, that before, when we weren't seeing this particular object, we can see that we're loading some of these domains, so these video-related domains, and everything looks good. During the course of the outage, they're not available, and when the outage is addressed a little bit later, they're back up, right? Mm-hmm. So during that 20 minutes, we don't see them, and then they come back. And that's really kind of been the case across the board with other locations as well. So we can see like Bucharest, for example, similar behavior. So
I think one thing that was interesting here in terms of the time it took to resolve, especially with that, kind of that stray AJAX component showing up, is in some locations, we noticed that it took about 10 minutes for the issue to get resolved. But in some other locations, it took about 20 minutes. Russia was a good example there where, we saw that it took about 20 minutes for the issue to get resolved. And it was kind of interesting just given the time when this happened, right? This happened around 4:30 p.m. in the West Coast of the U.S., probably pretty late night in Russia. So if
around 2:30 in the morning, yeah.
Right. So if there was a push in terms of resolution that was, done, which was obviously done, it kind of rotated around the more critical areas first, which is kind of intelligent and I think smart way to handle any changes.
Yeah, that's interesting because we saw that it took about the 20 minutes that Google indicated for Moscow, Kazan, and Turkey, which, they're not going to be at the top of their priority list because it's like in the middle of the night and people are probably not heavily using the service, but it came back faster, not only in the US, but even in the UK, in which it's still like around midnight, mm-hmm. So that's kind of interesting in terms of how the service outage resolved. So had some objects that, or an object, a particular object that we saw that was consistent throughout the service outage that was throwing a 500 error. A lot of other components of the page just weren't simply were not available during that period across the board. And then it resolved within roughly 10 minutes for users in the US and Western Europe, and then a little bit longer, 20 or so minutes for some users. In particular, we saw Russia, Turkey. So that's it was kind of a little, it was a a bit of a brouhaha on social media about not being able to use YouTube, which is an essential service at 4 p.m. ish in the afternoon on the West Coast
on a weekday.
On a weekday, of course.
For 20 minutes.
That's right. Pretty tragic. So that's what we saw as far as the YouTube service issue. And, you know, as YouTube says, they acknowledged it and had it resolved within about 20 minutes. Now, what was interesting was that on the same day, we also saw a sizable network outage. So again, this was not related to any Google, specifically to a Google service or application related. It was infrastructure within Google's network in the India region was having issues. So we can see here, this was again, same day, May 14th on a Thursday, and it was 22:45 UTC. Somebody has to do the math on that in terms of what time it was on the West Coast where I am, and then of course Archana, you're in New York on the East Coast. So we saw here that for users in India, there was a pretty significant, you know, number of nodes here that was impacting the reachability of Google services. So users in that region connecting to, you know, a variety of Google services may have experienced a disruption in reaching some of those services.
So that was around the same time, around the YouTube outage, but they were, you know, mutually independent, like one was not impacting the other. So it was around 4:45 actually PM. It's around the same time.
Which is interesting because when we started to kind of, you know, look at some of the complaints that people were, or had on YouTube, some of them even had mentioned, Google and having issues there. And it's interesting because, like, in looking at this, you can definitely go down the path of, like, you know, could it be network related? And this happened around the same time, but it's completely independent of this application issue. So just because it was correlated from a time standpoint, doesn't necessarily mean that it was, the cause of the issue. Sometimes many different things can go wrong. Just having a spot of bad luck, apparently, for Google on May 14th. So kind of moving on from that, the other major service outage that came up, and this was actually earlier in the week than the YouTube issue, that was Slack. Mm-hmm. And we definitely noticed it because suddenly, I started getting a whole flurry of emails and text messages and was just kind of wondering what was going on. And it turned out Slack was down.
So you're talking about it, like the YouTube and the Slack outage, they happened around the same time, like around the 4:30, 4:45 PST time frame, 2 days apart.
Yes, you're right. They did happen around the same time.
Yeah.
So what Slack had said was that they had an issue with basically registering a set of servers or the number of servers that they needed to provision. So they presumably provisioned the servers they need to meet user demand. But they apparently did not successfully register those servers with their load balancer. And because of that, traffic wasn't distributing across those servers in an optimal way. And therefore, that degraded the health of the available servers, which then led to users not able to access the service in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. So a series of unfortunate events where one thing leads to another. So this was, their very brief statement on it. Hopefully when they complete their postmortem analysis, there'll be additional information on this. But it does align with what we saw during the course of the outage. So this was kind of in the midst of this, right? We see a lot of red here. And what this is showing is that we're effectively getting HTTP errors across most locations. And in some locations, we're just simply not getting a response within, 5 seconds, and we're effectively timing out. So clearly, this is global. This is not network related, at least reaching the front door. Mm-hmm. And it does clearly seem to be something application related.
So comparing this to the YouTube, right? The YouTube was not network related too, but mm-hmm. HTTP was successful, and that was related to how the page was loading and a particular component having an issue. This is very interesting because this is again not necessarily a network issue, as you can see here, reaching the front door of Slack, but it does translate into an HTTP issue. Because the front servers were not necessarily responding because of a timeout, or because we were actually getting another HTTP error as the service was unavailable
itself. Right. So we were getting 503 error, which we'll take a look at in a moment. But basically, it's just sort of translates to the service isn't available, and so no part of the page itself was actually mm-hmm. loading, right? Just because they talked a little bit about their server infrastructure and the fact that they're using a load balancer, just wanted to take a quick look at kind of their delivery architecture reaching their front door. So we can see here that there's a number of locations we have on the left-hand side connecting to their front-end web servers. And they appear to be, Slack, in this case, they're sort of, they're hosted in AWS, and you can see the specific compute instances mm-hmm. they're using in various locations. You can also see that their IP addresses are fairly distinct. So most locations are connecting to a specific IP address or many different IP addresses, not in any CAS service by any means. So they're clearly using some mechanism, probably DNS, to distribute traffic across their front door. The other thing that's interesting is that not all of their locations
are kind of self-hosted.
That's right. Yeah. So we saw at least two, the Cape Town location where we see we're actually hitting CloudFront, mm-hmm. CloudFront POP. And then the other one was,
I believe Cairo.
Yeah. So Cairo is interesting because you're connecting here to, where did Cairo go?
All the way down. There you go.
Cairo is also connecting to CloudFront.
CloudFront, yeah.
At a different POP. So mm-hmm. the Cape Town location was connecting to a POP for CloudFront in Cape Town, and then Cairo is connecting to a CloudFront POP in Frankfurt. Which is interesting because we saw during the course of this incident that we were getting different response headers mm-hmm. As part of this 503 error.
So in some cases, we noticed that, if the web server or the front door server, like what Angelique was saying, was just not responding. So it was timing out after 5 seconds, right? So one was we were not getting any response from the server itself. And the other condition was we were getting a 503 service unavailable response. But from Cairo and Cape Town specifically, we were seeing a response code that was, that did indicate that they were front-ended by CloudFront, for one. And then it was a Xcache error from CloudFront right there. If you notice, which is interesting.
Yeah, if we look just at Cairo, for example, we know that they're front-ended by CloudFront, and we can see that during normal conditions in which you're getting a correct 200 OK, that you're getting kind of like this miss from CloudFront, which it probably indicates that CloudFront is doing what it's supposed to be doing and not caching it's not caching anything, but is just basically the front door and then is retrieving what they need to retrieve from Slack. So that's like under normal conditions, they're basically just the go-between between a user and the origin. Now, if the other front-end servers that Slack is hosting are behaving in a similar way, where they have to go back to origin or some back-end application server to service requests, that could be where the issue is. And that does align with this 503 error. So it's possible that the server infrastructure availability or resourcing issue was on the back end, and that's why it was so consistent across global users, right? Because it was a kind of a fundamental availability issue. So that's sort of just a very quick look at what we saw there. You know, again, in keeping with what Slack had to say on the issue, and maybe when they, provide more details in their postmortem, we can dig a little bit more into how that corresponds with what we're able to see.
Right. At this point, we can jump into our weekly analysis of how outages were doing. So let's get that right here. All right. So, week by week, we kind of analyze network outages in terms of, you know, how ISPs are doing, how cloud providers are doing, and so on. So the week of May 11th, as you can see here, we see a little bit of uptake in terms of the global outages, which includes all different network events, which can be, you know, in ISP networks, which can be in cloud provider networks. A little bit of, increase there, nothing to be specifically alarmed about. In terms of ISP outages, similar trend with the global outages, but then cloud outages, as you see here, especially in the US, has definitely gone down from 3 outages to 1 this week. So, I mean, it's always interesting to see how this trend line's going. We're kind of seeing a little bit of stability week by week. And we'll get to this again next week. But I think what's interesting here is that in our last episode, we had Arash, a senior researcher here, who kind of works on, you know, the outages and how we kind of look at outages in the back end. And he was talking about how the network outages and these numbers that we talk about here really refer to when there is 100% terminal loss in the infrastructure and the underlying network infrastructure, right? But outages does not have to necessarily manifest that way, like we saw in the case of YouTube, wherein you couldn't necessarily load particular videos. And then in the case of Slack, there was no issue with getting from a network perspective, getting to the front door of Slack, but then there was another backend issue that was probably causing that. What we saw interestingly is here, let me get to this particular view here. And what we saw in this particular instance is a French online portal, a learning portal that kids are accessing. And over time for the last week, we noticed this, you know, increase in the page load times of this particular website. And as you can see, kind of maps to time of day period, right? In the morning when the usage is high, we're starting to see some slowness. But then in the evening, things kind of taper down here. I think what was really interesting is when we kind of dug into the details of it, we noticed some display images, which were not really critical to the website, but those display images were taking really long to load. For instance, if you click on this image, and this is actually
good boy studying image.
Yeah. And this doesn't happen when there's, you know, off-peak hours, right? Those particular images, we don't see them taking that long a time. This was really interesting because these images that were, you know, in the case of that poor experience period during in the morning hours was actually being loaded from OVH. So it was like a third external third party that was actually causing and interrupting, performance. And it's interesting. I think they started out on 18th, and we're starting to see again this disruption. So just something to keep in mind that, outages don't necessarily have to mean a packet loss, 100% packet loss. It's also degradation in terms of, how the user is experiencing a particular website. And now, given that everything's online, everybody is accessing these things online, there is some pressure that usage and demand is creating on these services. Right, with that, let's go back here. And Anjali, do you want to introduce the state of the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. On the outage numbers, if you want to get, drill down into that a little bit more, you just go to thousandeyes.com/outages and and you can get all of the numbers there. So we brought this up last week. We are going to be putting on a virtual summit called State of the Internet. This is taking place on June 18th. And we're putting together kind of agenda for the event. We're going to be unveiling some new research. We are going to be moderating panels with folks talking about internet performance during the recent period, talking about BGP route security, as well as the future of the internet. We're going to have folks from that are network operators for internet infrastructure, as well as enterprise, and coming in and talking about their experience recently and what they expect going forward. So it'll be really exciting.
Right. We have, if you've been watching our series, David Belson from the Internet Society is actually going to be a part of this event, and he's going to talk about, internet resiliency in particular. We also have Edgecast on our agenda as well. So the agenda is building, and we'll keep you updated as to how that's turning out. All right. With that, we are almost at the end of our show. And again, as Angelique mentioned in the beginning, if you're still not following us, it's about time you do so. We're available in any of your favorite podcasts here. And then if you follow us, you will get this free t-shirt here, or email us at internetreport@thousandeyes.com, and we'll send you that t-shirt, working safely from home. And then before we wrap up, next week is going to be interesting. We're recording on Tuesday because it's Memorial Day on Monday. But I think the fun part of next week's show is we have Alan from Telegeography who's going to join us and really talk about submarine cables, their evolution, and how it's been holding up during COVID.
Absolutely. Yeah, we chatted last week. So this should be a really interesting conversation. We'll probably talk about a number of things, not just submarine cables, but some of the research they do, how they map, all of this. So we'll see what happens this week so we can talk about it next week with Alan.
All right. So with that, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for joining us.